Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand. He'll be back with you next week. Always a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for sharing part of your afternoon with me. I'm always grateful to you for that. Lots to do coming up on the program today. We are going to be taking a little look at the International Home and Houseware Show, see what we can expect from that. We're going to take a look at some projects that YWCA Metropolitan Chicago is doing, especially taking a look at that right now ahead of International Women's Day on March 8th. And we're going to take a look at, we're just going to dive right into the middle, really, of that, that conversation around Amazon being having their second headquarters here in Chicago, because that is turning into a rather contentious debate. So we're going to take a look at that and talk to some folks involved in that process. But before we get to that, we are joined by Andrea Hannes, editor of Blue Sky Innovation upstairs at the Tribune. Hello, how are you?
Hey, Amy, good. Great to see you.
Great to see you. Always a pleasure to have you on and always nice to talk with you. So I want to dive right in and talk about this Uber and Lyft story. You've got a couple Uber and Lyft stories at Blue Sky because there's lots of good stuff there. But one, really taking a look at how rideshare is congesting our cities in a really interesting way, particularly our very own city.
Yeah, so the hope going in, or the thought going in, was that maybe Uber would take cars off the street, right? Because you have less people zipping around in their own cars. Maybe they're just jumping in for a quick ride. However, there was a study basically showing that Uber and Lyft are actually clogging our streets even more, in part because they're pulling riders off of buses, subways, and bikes, and maybe even making them take trips they otherwise wouldn't have taken and putting them in cars.
But then we have, I think for a bit there was a conversation going about Uber Pool and Lyft Line and things like that, and Lyft Shuttle, that maybe that would pull people off of public transportation. There seemed like a secondary debate there. Have we seen anything like that making a dent?
Yeah, so there are some services now that both are offering that are very similar to public transportation, which on the one hand may be better in some ways if it's causing people to use fewer Ubers. On the other hand, public transit already has its challenges, and this is obviously taking paying customers off of public transit and perhaps endangering that. So I feel like anytime we talk about Uber and Lyft, it's all so in transition, right? There's constantly new services they're offering, constantly tweaks to it. And I think they would say we're not at the end point here. We're kind of transitioning people. And in the end, the transition still may mean fewer cars out there. But so far, it's not meaning that.
It's not meaning that so far. Well, and so then there's kind of another part of this that's really interesting, and that is adding in a healthcare note to rideshare, which is really an interesting thing to consider.
Yeah, so this is one of their sort of corporate type things. It's called Uber Health, and it will allow doctor's offices to set up rides for their patients with Uber. So it's actually the healthcare provider is paying for the ride because people need it. You know, there are people who aren't getting healthcare because they just don't have a way to get there and back. So solves that problem. And from a business perspective, you know, obviously gives Uber access to a lot of people that might not be using it because older people maybe don't have a smartphone. So it's a way of getting those people kind of into the Uber system and, you know, giving them a service they need.
It is an interesting idea, and I could see a use for it. And is it that the healthcare provider would completely absorb the cost, or would it be billed to you later at a much higher rate?
Yeah, they could potentially do that. It sounds like so far that's not what's happening, that the provider is kind of just eating the cost of that. But you could imagine the cost being passed on in some way too.
Absolutely. Yeah. As someone who has seen a $200 charge for an Advil, absolutely.
Yes, right? Exactly.
I can absolutely see that being a $300 Uber ride or something. All right, let's take a look at Spotify, because there's a lot of news coming from them right now, too.
Yeah, so Spotify, music listening subscription service, music streaming service, is competing with Apple a lot on that, and Spotify is about to go public. So that's bringing a lot of attention to its business.
And do we foresee any big changes or anything happening as far as the customer experience goes?
Yeah, so they're kind of battling it out with Apple. So there's nothing super clear yet on that, but I think they're both trying to figure out, you know, it's an unusual situation where Apple's actually behind someone. Right. Usually Apple's dominating everything. In this case, Spotify has about twice as many paying customers for its music service and several times more listeners because, you know, with Spotify, you can do the music streaming. And if you're willing to listen to ads, you don't actually have to pay for it. But now they're kind of competing for paying customers. And an interesting thing about Apple, although it's not yet winning numbers wise, the theory is that they've kind of now normalized the idea that you would pay for a music service, which may ultimately help both in a way, because Spotify has actually added more people since Apple started offering the service, which is kind of unusual. It's like they're competing, but it's making people maybe just get used to the idea that you're going to pay something every month to stream music without commercials.
Interesting. And I'm very interested in that particular space because I think it's sort of the next beat of musician versus distributor that is really interesting. And I foresee, this is just me speculating, but I really do foresee there being some kind of, there's another really big beat ahead of us here for this. No pun intended, of course, but another moment in this because it seems to be there's a bit of a groundswell of musicians going, okay, so that I had 100 million people listen to my song on Spotify, I got $400 for that. That's not quite fair. Yeah. And so I think there's a reckoning maybe that's brewing for musicians. We will see.
Yeah.
We shall see. Okay, so you've also recently taken a look at texting behavior among teens.
Yes, there was a big sexting study that came out this week, and it turns out in one of these, like, I'm kind of glad this wasn't around when we were that age kind of stories.
Right.
They kind of did an analysis of a number of other studies and found that about a quarter of teens, that was ages 11 to 18, with an average age of 15, about a quarter of them had received a sext, and about 15% had sent one.
Okay, so 25% received, 15% sent.
Yes.
Was there any sense of those receiving, were they solicited, were they unsolicited, or how did that break down?
Yeah, so that's kind of the interesting part. I was almost surprised just at how much people were taking it in stride. You know, the researchers were sort of saying, if it's people that are the same age, and it's consensual on both sides, the fact that they're doing, like, show me yours and I'll show you mine, so to speak, didn't necessarily worry them all that much. Hmm. Now, obviously, if you add on that step of then they're showing it all to their friends, or then they're doing the revenge porn, or like there's a lot of super negative things that are one short step past that. But just strictly looking at the sharing of pictures consensually between, you know, again, young people who are the same age as each other. So there's not a, you know, an older person involved or some other negative kind of characteristic of it. They weren't super worried about it. Like, they were kind of like, we need to just be educating teens about it, maybe not criminalizing it, which, you know, in some places it's a felony, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, if again, you're 14 and your boyfriend's 14 and you're sharing pictures, does somebody need to become a felon if that goes wrong? I guess the answer is, how wrong does it go?
Sure.
Maybe they do, but it's kind of looking at, you know, can we battle this with education and just have people be careful about it, which I found kind of interesting.
It is interesting. And as you note, it is a kind of a slippery slope because that is only a step away from suddenly a lot of people having access to a photograph.
Yeah. Because then, you know, the picture's obviously out of your control and, you know, it lasts forever in theory and all those things.
Right. It is interesting, though, to see and to read about young people's attitudes about it. It seems like kind of no big deal.
Exactly. It's definitely, and we're using the word normalizing again, but it's kind of seems pretty normalized. And again, when you think of, it's kind of natural to have curiosity and maybe to explore with your peers, things like that. And then, but putting it on the permanent digital record is, you know, a little nerve wracking.
I mean, I still don't see anything wrong with the old passing the note, check one, yes, no, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you like me? I don't see whatever happened to that. Oh, well.
Yep.
Bygone days. I guess that makes me sound like an old lady now.
I know. I often feel that way when I talk about these things too, right? It's definitely a different world.
Definitely, definitely a different world. Well, thank you for all this and all the wonderful stories coming out of Blue Sky Innovation. We will continue to turn there for the latest on all things business. Andrea Hannes, thank you so much for being with us today. We will see you next time.
Thanks, Amy.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand. Thanks for being with us today. Steve will be back with you next week. Still lots to do on the program today. A little bit on the other side of news, we're going to be taking a look at the conversation around whether or not Amazon should be coming to Chicago. And we're going to take a look at some initiatives going on at the YWCA of Metropolitan Chicago ahead of International Women's Day on March 8th. We're going to take a look at the work they're doing. But before we do that, and before news and all that, we're joined now by John Jesse, Vice President at International Housewares Association, to talk with us about the upcoming International Home and Housewares Show right here in our own city. Thanks so much for being with us, John.
Sure. Thank you for having me on.
So talk to us about this very large, I think it attracts about over 60,000 people. So it's a very, very large event. Talk to us about what we can expect this year.
Sure. It is the largest annual trade event at McCormick Place, and we do expect over 60,000 total attendees at the show. It really, Chicago becomes the center of the housewares world for 4 days beginning next Saturday, March 10th. It's an opportunity, quite frankly, for us to showcase for our exhibitors and our manufacturers what's new in the housewares industry, what's trending, as well as provide education around what's happening, whether it's fashion, color, trend, smart home technology, and really provide an opportunity for our exhibitors to showcase their product and, quite frankly, show what's new that consumers will be seeing, you know, on store shelves and online, beginning as early as this month and certainly heading into the balance of the year.
I'm glad you mentioned the smart home products, because I feel like a few years ago, that was one of those things that only very, very, you know, technology embracing people had. And now it's so very commonplace to have in the home.
Yes, it is very much commonplace. But quite frankly, I think based on how quickly technology is evolving and coming to market, it's ever evolving. And to your point, I do think within the past couple of years, every avenue, whether it's exhibitor, manufacturer, designer, certainly consumers, we're trying to find out how does smart home really apply. Customer ultimately drives a lot of that decision making in terms of convenience and what they want. So there's a lot of research and data around smart home, but I do believe it is evolving quickly. It's becoming very relevant and adaptable, whether it's literally platform-based or certainly app-based in terms of running a particular product. But smart home definitely will be an emphasis at our show this year. It continues to evolve. We're actually putting together a quite large pavilion where we're going to bring thought leaders together as well as exhibitors in the smart home space to be able to show not only our attendees but exhibitors as well what's happening in this industry.
Well, that's very, very important to do, because I think, as you say, it's a constantly evolving aspect of housewares. And
yes,
taking a look at the numbers, so there was an independent, there was a report that IHA, that's a mouthful, IHA's put together. It was sort of a state of the industry report looking at a lot of data. And it is an unbelievably large industry. We're talking about $355.4 billion with a B globally and $87.1 billion with a B domestically. Is that something you're seeing stays fairly even throughout different economic dips? Or is that something that you've seen rise or fall? Or where do you see that?
Yeah, quite frankly, that number has actually grown, and it has grown, I think, faster than general consumer retail. And I think there are a lot of things that are driving that. There have been times where the home industry has been perceived to lag or follow behind other industries based on technology, newness, how quickly something gets to market. But, you know, I'd say over the last 10 to 20 years, technology has really allowed the housewares business to really not lag anymore. It's right there with any other industry in terms of newness, product, fashion, trend. I always find it funny because my background is retail, and I've been in this type of industry for over 35 years. And I remember when our choices for small electrics were white and white. You know, that's the only thing that was available. And now you see color, fashion, trend. In addition to that, you see, you know, the consumers, whether it's millennials, accepting this product much more quickly than they used to. And I think what's driving a lot of that are some of these shelter magazines, TV, home shows, you know, cooking shows and magazines are very popular and entertaining. And that's driven not only the business in general, but certainly celebrity chefs. The popularity of restaurants and dining out continues to, I think, allow our industry to probably, you know, run a little bit faster and a little bit quicker than average consumer retail.
Wonderful. Well, again, it's March 10th through 13th at McCormick Place. John Jesse, VP at International Housewares Association. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Sure. Thank you.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand. He'll be back with you next week. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate you sharing part of your afternoon with us, as ever. Still lots to do on the program today. A little bit later, we're going to be taking a look at that conversation around whether or not Amazon's second headquarters should be here in Chicago. We're going to hear from some folks who believe, in fact, that it should and are working to make that the case. But right now, we're joined by phone by Dori McWhorter, who's the CEO of YWCA Metropolitan Chicago. Hi, Dori. Thanks for being with us today.
Hello. Glad to be here.
I appreciate you taking time out of your what I'm sure is a very busy day. Well, I want to talk a little bit about some of the projects and campaigns and initiatives that you have going on at YWCA Metropolitan Chicago, but especially as we talk about, you know, there's so much conversation right now around women and workplace and just a change generally socially right now. And I wonder your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm excited to see this happening because the YWCA Metropolitan Chicago has been at our work to eliminate racism and empower women for over 140 years. So it's about time that we're seeing more discussion and having more conversations to really see how we can advance the progress of women.
Indeed. And, you know, I want to talk about the word empower. It's a word that we get that kind of gets thrown around a lot, especially now we're heading into it's Women's Month and March 8th is International Women's Day. And we use this word empower. And I think there's a little bit of pushback sometimes on that word that perhaps maybe it is sort of absolving the issues, right? That it's kind of making it up to women to take the wheel as opposed to acknowledging things that perhaps women are up against.
Well, and I could definitely see that interpretation around the word empower. I think for us, in terms of the strategy that we're seeing at the YWCA, that we want to make sure that we're doing two things. We are absolutely supporting women in being prepared to take on the 21st century marketplace. But at the same time, we're also working to ensure that the marketplace is ready to be inclusive of women. So I think we have to work both sides of that at all times.
And what are some of the things that you're doing for women and girls to help them in the workplace and just in life? I know there's so many projects, but any particular that you'd like to highlight?
Sure. Well, there's a few things that we're working on right now. We have launched our Construct program, which focuses on getting women and people of color into the utility construction trade. And this is huge, as we know that those are great opportunities. And as our utility partners are continuing to expand their smart grid and the approaches that they're using to deliver utilities, it's very important that people have these new skills and have access to those jobs. We're also launching a small business development center on the south side of Chicago in the Woodlawn neighborhood. And again, this is just a great opportunity for women to access resources to grow small businesses. So we're excited about that. And in addition to that, our Tech Girls program continues to focus girls on science, technology, engineering, and math. We actually say STEAM, so science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, to just really give girls the skills that they need and the confidence they need to pursue different career paths.
I like that the STEAM versus STEM, because it seems like it's a little more inclusive of all kind of different
Absolutely.
Interests.
Absolutely. And we know that our women are multifaceted, and our girls, as we like to call them, our future women, are very multifaceted and just have great opportunities that we want them to be able to participate in.
Yes, that's really wonderful. And what's the age group of girls that you're working with in that program?
For our Tech Girls program, we started girls ages 8.
So early.
Or very early. Actually, one of our earliest participants was actually a 6-year-old.
Overachiever.
Yes, overachiever. And she's excellent. Now she's been with us for some years. I think she's about 10 now. And so we just really have watched our girls continue to grow through this process.
That's so wonderful.
But I would also say from our overall services perspective, we see children as early as 2 years old with some of our sexual assault support services mm-hmm. and counseling in that area as well.
And so to go back to where we started this conversation, we're in this Me Too era. There's a lot of conversations. I think some leaders are kind of frustrated. What advice would you have for leaders who are trying to maybe make a more inclusive or more open environment in the workplace?
I think think it's absolutely critical, and I think that if we focus on creating safe and healthy work environments, these are environments that absolutely thrive and have employees that are highly productive. So while we're having a lot of disclosure around Me Too, the reality of it is that we really do need to focus on how to create safe and healthy work environments for all of our employees.
Indeed. And so as are there any particular projects that YWCA Metropolitan Chicago has coming up for March? I know you it's kind of always Women's Month there, but
every month is Women's Month at the YWCA Chicago, right? But we are because we absolutely have to celebrate this day or this month and take an opportunity to highlight the women that we believe have not only made history but continue to help us create history. And so one of the events that we have is on Sunday, March 25th, was what we call our New Look of Leadership with yours truly. You're going to be
That's right.
one of the leaders that are highlighted, but really just exposed to Chicago to the diversity of leaders that we have here and hear their stories. And of course, we do like fashion, too, so we're going to integrate both of those things.
I'm going to do my best, Dory. I have no idea what my modeling career for one day is going to look like, but I'm going to give it a shot.
It'll be great.
It'll be a lot of fun, if nothing else. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Dory McWhorter, CEO of YWCA Metropolitan Chicago, for talking about this moment that we're in and women in the workplace.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand. He will be back with you next week. So, you know, there is a big conversation going about where Amazon is going to put its second headquarters. And of course, as that conversation got going, a lot of people developed very passionate opinions on that topic. Some saying, absolutely, it should come to Chicago. And some saying, absolutely not, it should not come to Chicago. So we're joined now by Katie Lynch, who is involved with the coalition called Chicago's All-In Campaign, a group of business leaders and people that want to bring Amazon's second headquarters here to Chicago. Hi, Katie. Nice to hear from you today.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Always a pleasure to cross paths with you and have you on the air. So you are involved with Chicago's All-In campaign. Tell us a little bit about that and the work that you're doing with them.
Yeah, so the Chicago is on an All-In campaign. You know, simply put, it exists to truly shed a light on why Chicago should be the home of Amazon's second headquarters. The campaign itself shows that Chicagoans from all over the city are in for Amazon, and I'm just delighted to be part of this effort, which gives the average Chicagoan, you know, the opportunity to show their support for the city's bid.
And so what is the stance of the organization? Because this is getting to be a bit of a contentious debate. It seems very polarizing. There's not a lot of people that are just kind of, meh, I could take it or leave it. People are either really for it or really against it. Where do you stand on when people say, why do you want Amazon in Chicago? What do you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, I'm for it. And I'm for it for a multitude of reasons. I mean, first and foremost, this is going to be game-changing for Chicago. We're talking about a $5 billion investment from Amazon in this city. 50,000 direct jobs, 30,000 indirect jobs, you know, beyond the numbers even, this second headquarters will just infuse an energy and excitement across every neighborhood in the city. You know, for me, you know, especially I work in technology and innovation and entrepreneurship. And for me, what this move will mean to Chicago is that it really will affirm our position as a global tech leader.
No doubt. And so there are a lot of other business leaders that are involved in this coalition. It seems like a lot of support from the tech community. What other industries are represented in this coalition?
I mean, every industry, to be frank. You know, again, we're talking about 50,000 jobs. It's really going to have this ripple effect amongst all different industries across the city.
And so to speak to your opposition, because if people are saying the people that are opposing Amazon being here tend to immediately point to the housing crisis and displacing neighborhoods, mm-hmm. What would you say to your opposition there?
Yeah, you know, I would say, I mean, as far as, like, I see what you're saying, like, driving up housing costs or hurting neighborhoods. And let's be frank, you know, rent is already high in Chicago. And when you think about you know, the job creation, really, that this is providing. Every neighborhood really stands to benefit from this. And if anything, I think that the second headquarters will give Chicago a real estate, Chicago real estate, a boost.
And so different areas have been discussed. I know people were talking about the old post office. There was some talk about having it in a more suburban location. Is the coalition trying to perhaps nudge Amazon not only here, but to a particular area of the city?
I'll be honest, that's probably a better question for the organizers themselves.
Fair enough. And so where can people go to find out more about your organization and the work you're doing and perhaps get involved or support you if they feel like they would like to?
So, I mean, as far as the Chicago is All-In campaign, the website itself is just chicagoisallin.com. They have an awesome Facebook and Twitter page, which is just at Chicago is All In.
I've seen you all over Twitter. It's hard to miss you on Twitter anyway, Katie, but of course I've seen you sharing stuff there for this organization. Well, so we will, I'm sure, hear from you and this organization again as this continues to unfold before Chicago or before Amazon releases kind of the short list and then makes its final decision. Are there any events planned or anything like that from the coalition?
You know, all of that information is going to come in time. I know that they do have a sign-up list, so if you go to the website and just enter your name and email, they will be sending out newsletters in the near future.
Sounds good. All right, Katie Lynch, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.